I'm up on the tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
Today we'll be speaking with Ben Holden about a collection that he co-edited with his father called Poems That Make Grown Men Cry.
100 Men on the Words That Move Them. It is an anthology of poems chosen by men, famous men, filmmakers, actors, writers, you name it, even singers.
Singers too, yeah.
Musicians. Poets and, writers, and they were asked to choose one poem that makes them weep every time they read it. And it's a really interesting collection. And Ben Holden, all the way from London, is going to be talking to us about this collection. So stick around for that.
But before we get started, Daniel, I was actually thinking as I had opened the book for the first time, I was wondering, just right up front, you know, I wonder if they included any poems that make people cry or grown men cry because you laugh so hard you cry, you know? and I actually ended up finding one. And I'd like to just share that because it's really it's kind of a short poem by Bertolt Brecht. And the poem is called The Book Burnings. And I think that you could identify with this, Daniel.
What, you think I burn books? I burn through them, baby.
Here goes. The Book Burnings. When the regime ordered that books with harmful knowledge should be publicly burnt, and all around, oxen were forced to drag cartloads of books to the pyre, one banished poet, one of the best, discovered, studying that list of the burnt, to his horror, that his books had been forgotten. He hurried to his desk on wings of rage and wrote a letter to the powers that be. Burn me, he wrote, his pen flying. Burn me. Don't do this to me. Don't pass me over. Have I not always told you the truth in my books? And now I am treated by you as a liar. I order you. Burn me.
Wow, that is great. That's wonderful. Yeah, because, you know, I mean, the fact is, if someone's going to burn book, it's probably going to be for very narrow political, social reasons. Right. And if it's so narrow, then, of course, we want our writing to be expansive to be included on that banned book list.
I agree. I often, in fact, feel offended that my book is not on the banned list in Arizona.
You know? I know. Me too.
And none of my books are.
I remember
that. What do you got to do, right, to get on that list?
I remember. There were almost 100 books by Chicanos, or I don't remember how many there were, but I remember I Googled it to see how many of my books were on it. There were certainly at least two or three of them, not a single one of my books. I thought, what?
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe the next book I write should be called Let's Overthrow the U.S. Government.
And then it'll be banned.
Maybe they'll ban it.
Maybe the problem is that your books are so, like, they're like on the banned list. Yeah. They're banned from being banned.
And yours weren't on the list either. Wow.
No, it's because
they didn't read our books then because they would have banned them, Tim.
I agree. And maybe it's as Brecht says, you know, maybe my books did not tell enough truth. Maybe they were not true enough.
Do you know the poet David Dominguez?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, he has two books out. The
Work
last
Done
one
Right?
is called The Ghost of Cesar Chavez.
Oh, okay.
And the first one was, what was it?
Work Done Right.
Work Done Right. Yeah, he's a wonderful poet. We had him on the show one time. But I had looked at that list of banned books, and for some reason I saw his name on that list.
Right.
I could have swore I saw it. So when I had him on the show, I says, hey, congratulations. And he was very excited that his name was on that because he didn't know. And so,
I know where it's going.
Immediately after I talked to him, he Googled it. And he couldn't find his name. Where's my book? I can't find it. Can you send me that list? And so I looked at the list again, and his name was not on it. Neither was I. Felt so bad, and so I had to tell him, oh, sorry, my mistake.
So it wasn't banned after all?
It wasn't banned after all. Stick around. We're going to talk to Ben Holden, co-editor of Poems That Make Grown Men Cry. And afterwards, Tim and I are going to share poems that make us cry. So stick around.
Poems That Make Grown Men Cry, 100 Men on the Words That Move Them, is a collection of poems that has been handpicked by writers, actors, and filmmakers who were asked to select poems that made them cry. The book is co-edited by a father and son team, Anthony and Ben Holden. In the collection, we get an array of poems ranging from sad or nostalgic, poems that make us laugh, poems about children and love and death and birth, just a wide range of reasons. It was published by Simon & Schuster. And today we have on the line Ben Holden. Ben, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. Good to be here.
We're talking about your collection here, Poems That Make Grown Men Cry, 100 Men on the Words That Move Them. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about how the idea for this collection came about?
Absolutely. Well, it begins with my father having a conversation, Anthony, who's also my co-editor, my dad having a conversation 20-some years ago with a friend who was having a personal crisis at the time. And he and my stepmom took them out, these friends out for supper to cheer them up. And the guy was a very literary soul and a very bookish man. And the only way that he could really explain what he was feeling during this emotional time was by referencing a poem. And as he started to recite the poem that summed up what he was going through, he broke down in tears and couldn't finish the poem. So it was a very moving, powerful episode.
Right.
But my dad was quite struck by this. So he started to ask friends, some of them writers, some of them, again, literary folk, but just his mates, you know, do you have a poem that you can't read without finishing and that makes you cry? And he got some really fascinating responses. One of the first people he asked was a literary professor here in England called Frank Kermode, who's since passed away, but was a very big figure in academia.
Right.
And Frank immediately chose a Larkin poem, for instance, and this was fascinating for my father. So anyway, he didn't do much with the idea. He thought about editing it into something or doing something with this conversation, but had another book to write. He's a busy author, and nothing came of it until... cut to 20 years later, now 3 years ago or so, and I actually had the idea of teaming up as a father-son duo and having a crack at putting this thing together.
And how was that working with your father? Did you, like, we co-edit books. I've co-edited a few books myself. Sometimes you have arguments. how was it to work with your father?
It's been joyous. It's been really, really fun, and I'm not sure that he'll be listening because he's here in London, so I'm saying that genuinely and honestly.
Well, you know, we are podcasts, so he could listen to it anywhere.
Oh, he can.
Yes.
Oh,
right.
Well, just as well I was polite then. no, it's been really fun. It's been one of the most rewarding things about this whole journey is that it's been with Dad, and very meaningful. It is funny, though, when we have our little disagreements, like you were saying, as is the way with co-editors. One, for instance, you know, as we got these contributions, which we can talk about more.
Right.
But one of the things we talked about was whether we should permit song lyrics, and we had a lot of back and forth about that.
Right.
And there were also some prose type selections, sort of prose poems, and we had some fairly feisty discussions. But all of which I hasten to say I won any disagreements.
When we're teenagers, I think we first learn how to cry and how to encourage the act of crying by listening to song lyrics. You know, we break up with a girlfriend and we listen to a song over and over, but we encourage it, you know, because somehow that crying is therapeutic to us. And I think that this experience for young men and men throughout, you know, is certainly pretty common. But it does start with song lyrics. And if you're literary, it probably, it's going to happen with poems, but song lyrics really are one of the very first things that we respond to for this necessary crying game. Why did you decide not to include song lyrics?
Well, we've included a lullaby. Carl Bernstein chose a lullaby, All the Pretty Horses, which was the closest we got to bending our rules. But it was really a simple title concept discussion in that this is poems that make grown men cry. And while we both feel that lyrics can be poetry, you know, you think most obviously of Bob Dylan or Leonard Cohen, of course, lyrics are often poetic or poetry in their own right. And Leonard Cohen began as a poet before he was a songwriter. But we wanted to keep the book very focused on poems. And I think it's an interesting point, though, in terms of the crossover. You know, the crying theme was really interesting to me, and I researched it a bit. And I have, for instance, I have twins, a boy and a girl, and they're seven. But they cry evenly at the moment. They cry the same amount at different things.
Mm-hmm.
In 2 years or so, it's proven that my boy will cry less. And crying is I discovered in this process, you know, we're the only species that cries through emotion.
Mm-hmm.
There may be crocodile tears or dog roomy tears, but we're the only species that cries, and Darwin called it that special expression of man's. And yet, from around the age of 10, us guys cry less. And it's not necessarily a healthy thing, I think. I'm not suggesting that we should all be weeping the whole time, but to repress those tears, which are a sort of chemical process for the body's bloodstream to cleanse itself, is perhaps unhealthy.
Do any of the poems in this anthology make you cry?
I certainly choke up. I certainly have a lump in my throat at some of them. And what was joyous, and we discovered this as we went along, we teamed up with Amnesty in terms of the process after we had agreed to have a crack at it, as I said. And we teamed up with Amnesty, who are really brilliant partners, and there's a strong freedom of expression theme in the book. But then we had to get 100 contributions from very well-known and very brilliant and busy and influential and distinguished men, and it was just joyous to see the introductions arrive. So we realized early on with our publishers that we couldn't just let them choose a poem and plonk it in. We had to ask them why this had such an effect. And when you have someone leading you by the hand into a poem, it makes it a lot easier to then sit down and read it and connect with it. Even if your experience is slightly different of it, you know, these are universal things. You know, we have Seamus Heaney choosing a poem, and then Richard Curtis, writer of Four Weddings and other films, Love Actually, chose a poem by Seamus Heaney. And, you know, J.J. Abrams chose a poem by Billy Collins. And then Billy Collins chose a poem by someone. There were these really lovely connections and little symmetries. We had 5 instances of 2 men independently choosing the same poem for very different reasons. And you have 2 very brilliant people coming at the same poem from different angles. So I think it allows people to weigh in, these introductions.
Right. And, you know, just for the listeners out there, to give them a little bit of context about your book, I mean, as you said, you've handpicked these contributors to select their own poems that, you know, make them cry. Each poem is actually set up by the person. So, for example, you chose James Earl Jones, and James Earl Jones picks a poem. He has this sort of very small kind of 1-page summary about the poem before you get the poem, right? I mean, that's how it works.
Exactly.
And, you know, you have really a broad range of contributors, like James Earl Jones is in there, Daniel Radcliffe. You have the musician Nick Cave. The list goes on and on. And I imagine that the production of the book itself, you know, the selection of it must have been daunting. You know, can you tell us a little bit about how that worked out?
Yes, absolutely. We started, once we decided to try and do this, we, as well as approaching Amnesty, we initially first went to 10 or so famous writers and actors who we knew. As I said, my dad's a writer, and I work in film over here as well as books. And so we had a few links to people. For instance, Christopher Hitchens, a week before he passed away, he was a good friend of dad's, and he chose a poem just before, literally right before he died. So that was very moving. But we also, I'd worked with Daniel Radcliffe, who you mentioned. And these guys very kindly gave us a poem quite early on. And so we started to build a group of quite heavyweight names, Salman Rushdie, Ian McEwan, John le Carré. And in terms of where we ended up, it was mostly writers and actors, which I suppose is not a huge surprise when you think of people who might be moved and love poetry. But we did try and diversify a bit, and Amnesty brought a number of human rights activists, a lot of people who have been imprisoned for their views, and some of whom are poets who have been imprisoned. And so that added a really nice flavor of activism and, as I said, freedom of expression to the group as well.
You're talking to us from London, and I imagine you grew up in the UK, but there's a cultural phenomenon here. Perhaps it's there too when you were a kid and, you know, you fall in love, you make a mixtape, and you give it to your lover, and they, of course, probably never really listen to it, or they listen to every song and think every lyric applies to them. But we spend a lot of time picking out those songs and thinking.
Don't worry. We did the same. I still make playlists. You know, I love that.
We spend so much time picking out the songs and listening to the lyrics and thinking that they're so significant that after a while it comes to represent us as opposed to the music. And I'm wondering if there's times when somebody's asked, pick a poem that makes you cry. It's going to be an anthology. It's going to be printed in the UK, and it's going to be printed in the United States. If they're making the decisions based not necessarily on what makes them cry, but what they would like one to perceive makes them cry.
Oh, that's a very cynical.
No. Let me finish. Let me follow up. So I'm wondering if some of the poems and the explanations behind the poems were rejection worthy.
No, we didn't reject any of them. The only things we rejected were two or three songs.
Right.
For the people who offered them. No, and I think in fairness, speaking seriously, you know, the people here, many of them we don't know. You know, as
right.
it grew, we started getting poems from people who, again, we maybe had a link to via ourselves or friends or Amnesty or our publishers, perhaps, but we didn't know them, and often they put themselves really, really out there and on the line, you know, very personal, very raw, emotional mm-hmm. stuff here,
right.
sometimes quite confessional, sometimes quite grief-stricken. You know,
right.
we have three contributors who have lost a child, which is sort of the ultimate
right. Christopher
pain
Cooper
for
is
a human.
Yeah.
And very, very moving. And I think, again, going back to music as well and crying, why the concept sort of began to click is that the only times really that you'll hear a poem, unless you're, you know, going to poetry events and are very much an aficionado, you know, your average person, man in the street, will hear a poem at a wedding or at a funeral in public. And those are the times where we gather together and it's okay to cry, and they're very big emotional comings together for us. And I think music allows us to access those kind of frequencies, emotional frequencies as well. But poetry can cut through things in a very condensed way and express things that we may have thought often but never quite articulated. And I think that's
right.
That's where the book is at its best.
Now, the title again is Poems That Make Grown Men Cry. Is the target audience for this, do you see the target audience being men? Or, you know, just in general, what do you hope folks will get from the book?
Well, I think it's, funnily enough, I think I always assumed more women would buy the book for the man in their life.
Oh, that makes sense.
Perhaps someone who doesn't cry easily. I've certainly come across that once or twice, trying to get them in touch with that side of themselves.
Sure.
But I think it's really, I'd love to think that it would get people into, you know, perhaps younger readers or people who aren't into poetry would give it another try. Or, you know, again, if you have someone you admire, whether it's Colin Firth or Stephen Fry or Tom Hiddleston or Richard Ford or, you know, Nick Cave, you mentioned Daniel
right.
Radcliffe for younger readers as well.
Right.
You know, if you have someone like him leading you by the hand into a poem, it might make more sense or might allow you to, you know, sit down and read it when you might not otherwise have done so. So I'd love to think younger readers or those who perhaps haven't read poetry for a while might look at it. But again, there's something in it for everyone, because even the most expert readers like yourselves, I think there's, you know, people have chosen some old favorites and well-known pieces, but there are a lot of new things in here as well.
It's a fantastic book, and I certainly love the introductions that everyone who chose a poem gives. It gives me some insight into it. But I have a two-part question. One, why did you decide to go just with men, and why not poems that make women cry? And I think you kind of answered that a little bit earlier about, you know, when you talked about your son and how he's not going to be crying as much in a couple of years. And then the second part of the question is Nadine Gordimer, wonderful fiction writer, nonfiction
yeah.
writer, did the afterwards. And in essence, you're giving the last word to a woman. What prompted you guys to make that decision?
First of all, you'll be very excited and pleased to hear that we are at work hard on poems that make grown women cry.
Nice.
All right.
We'll get you on the show again.
A sister will be born next year, a collection to accompany this, which was always the plan. And
nice.
As I said, I think there is, we were accused a little bit of being a slightly gimmicky or cutesy with the title, but at the same time, it's a hook, which is valid, I think, because guys do cry less.
True, absolutely.
And, you know, in many cultures, perhaps, you know, the U.S. is probably the most accepting, I would think. Statistically, I think that's true, of men crying. And we Brits, although we're famous for stiff upper lip, you know, we've sort of softened up a little bit, and it's more acceptable here, too. But don't forget, in many cultures, it's totally unacceptable.
Sure.
And I think the Amnesty director here in the UK who wrote a piece at the end, I could read a little bit of what she said, because I think she really tackles it really well. she says this is a reason that Amnesty are interested in the book, because it directly addresses the assumption bordering on cliche that women are more emotional, weaker than men. Yet the contributions are all written by successful, influential men, some with very tough images, who admit to crying. Right. We know that bottling up emotions can lead to aggression. More than this, gender stereotyping is dangerous because it represses ability and ambition. Mm-hmm. It encourages discrimination, and it upholds social inequalities that are a root cause of violence. So, without getting too heavy about it, we think there is a valid angle and something to explore here, and we're thrilled that we have the chance now to compile the partner collection for 100 amazing women choosing poems. And similarly, we'll probably need a remarkable man to have the afterword there. The last word, a bloke to have the last word on 100 women choosing poems. Nadine Gordimer, it was very important to me in particular that I felt very strongly that a woman should have the last word.
That's nice. It's a great collection. Thanks a lot for joining us. We were talking to Ben Holden, co-editor with his father, of Poems That Make Grown Men Cry, 100 Men on the Words That Move Them. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us, Ben.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to thank Ben Holden for being on our show, and we thought we would share some poems that, or talk about poems that make us cry, because the one that I would want to share is way too long to read.
Oh, really? Yeah. Which one was that?
It's by Ernesto Cardenal, and mm-hmm. it's called Oda a Marilyn Monroe, Ode to Marilyn
yeah,
Monroe.
Yeah, that's a great poem, man.
Every time I read that, by the time I get to that last stanza, you know, it's about the death of Marilyn Monroe, how they found her with a phone in her hand. And Ernesto Cardenal is saying, well, who was she trying to call? And he goes into her background and talks about really economic class and how the whole 20th century Fox machine, as he refers to it, is encouraging these young women to use their beauty as commodity.
Right.
And that she really was a victim of this suicide. It was really kind of like murder.
Right.
But, you know, he's talking about who she was going to call. But in the very last line, oh, it's so beautiful. And he says, mm-hmm. Whoever she was trying to call, Lord, you pick up that phone. Because, you know, he was a priest.
Right,
it's really
beautiful,
beautiful poem. But anyway, that one always makes me weep. I can't get through it without crying.
So if you were asked, invited to make a selection, that would have probably been the one you chose?
That would be one of them. That would be one of them. Mm-hmm. But it's too long to read. So I chose another one.
Nice.
I chose a poem by my mentor, Corinne Clegg Hills.
Oh, okay. Oh, great.
Called Bigger. What about you? Which poem?
I actually chose, as soon as I actually saw the title, I instantly thought of the Jimmy Santiago Baca poem, Crying Poem. So I actually chose that one because that poem really was probably the first poem I ever read that moved me to tears.
Mm.
Yeah. So I'm going to share just an excerpt of that because that's a long poem also, but I'll share an excerpt of it. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Crying Poem. For the longest time, I haven't been able to cry. Tears start to come while I'm watching a movie. Tears start to come, swelling my whole body, a tulip starting to open under moon. Then the petals of my eyelids stiffen and something in me braces, and I don't cry. When we crashed into a telephone pole, my dad yelled at me not to cry. I was terrified, almost killed, but don't cry, he said. Don't cry. I couldn't cry because men don't cry. When the dog bit me on the leg, I couldn't cry. When Joey died, I couldn't cry. How cool it would feel to have a tear slide down the corner of my eye, on my cheek, to the curve of my lip, where I could taste it. But I don't cry. Something blocks the paths, channels under my skin. Tear ducts are red, cracked clay for 30 years, drought, famined. Since I was 8 when I got a beating for crying, my heart, an open furnace, oven door, rage seething for tears to cool it down. But coal hoveling men keep feeding it. Don't cry, they say. Don't cry. Don't cry. I want to untie my hands like a tired boxer's gloves and lay them down on the table, gripped in their tight clench of defense. And I want to grow new hands, open flowers, moistened by my tears.
Wow, that is beautiful. Yeah. And, you know, Jimmy Santiago Baca, you know, he has this reputation of being very hardened, you know,
right.
in prison.
Yeah,
and he's very masculine.
Right.
And this poem could be in this book.
Yeah, I mean, it totally could. And it goes on and it builds. The poem builds and builds to the point where he's just kind of – he's crying in words, actually. The words are just kind of pouring out on the page. It's a beautiful poem and it's powerful, yeah.
Well, you know, I remember when I was in – I think I was in ninth grade. Disco was really popular and John Travolta came out with that movie Saturday Night Fever. And I used to wear these white – I bought these white, tight
of course you did.
Polyester jeans, you know, and I wore my silk shirt. And, man, I looked cool because it was the first pair of white Angel Flights in the school, right?
Yeah.
And I remember walking around with them feeling really good.
Hey, why are you touching your butt when you say that,
because,
by the way?
Because, man, my butt looked good in that. And that ain't all that looked good, buddy. Anyway, it was, you know, it also was popular at the time. And I remember there was this kid who bought some, too. And he looked better than I did, and I was jealous. So I told Johnny De La Rosa, I said, man, that guy's got my pants. And Johnny says, let's get him. And so he gets a big cherry Coke that he had, this big cherry soda that he had, and he's walking by Buddy. His name was Buddy. And he pretends to trip, and he gets cherry Coke all over Buddy's white polyester pants.
Dude,
and
Buddy
starts
dirty.
Crying. I mean, that's the reaction. We thought the reaction would be, hey, man, you want
to
fight? But
he
Buddy starts crying.
Wow.
And it just oh man, I felt so bad, and it made me want to cry. And every time I would think about it, you know, I would like want to weep.
Yeah.
And that's what this poem by Quinn Clegg Hills mm-hmm. reminds me of. It's called Bigger, and it's basically about her picking on somebody. I don't know if you know this poem, but it's from her latest book.
No.
And you know Quinn Clegg
yes, she's
Hills
great
as well as I do. She's one of your mentors too.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
But rather than read it, I'm going to do what Ben Holden did, and we're going to let the last word and the quote of the week.
Nice.
Go to Corinne Clegg Hills.
Wonderful.
One of the best women poets out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bigger.
Bigger. Crouched low in my dank pool of rage, I waited behind the wooden fence until she walked through the gate. She was bigger than me, but slower, and I sprang up, slamming deep into her belly with both fists over and over with more force than I believed my body could produce. She collapsed, hard and heavy as a wet pair of jeans might drop from a clothesline. But she didn't look angry or afraid. She stared at me with what seemed like awe before she stopped falling and began to cry, not loudly as I expected, but softly, almost weeping, sitting there in a pale clump of her mother's spent daffodils, arms wrapped around her knees. I could hear a dog barking in the yard next door and someone's car starting as if nothing had happened. And I just stood there, hands hanging stupidly above her, trembling with what should have been shame, wanting her to stand, to strike back, to make it right.
That was Bigger by Corinne Clegg Hills. And that poem makes me cry. It makes me think of... Poor Buddy, who's probably still out there,
yeah,
not buying clothes because of Johnny De La Rosa.
Did you ever apologize?
No, I never did. I never did.
Maybe that's the next poem you have.
Yeah. I'm Daniel Tricon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of Words on a Wire.
And we'll see you next week.